You are Locked On Packers, your daily Green Bay Packers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
R-E-L-A-X. Relax. We're going to be okay.
It is time.
I feel like we can run the table. We're going to do it.
You are Locked On Packers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am Peter Bukowski, and I cover the Packers for SB Nation. I cover the NFL around the internet, and you can follow me on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Packers. You can like us on Facebook. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Spotify, on Google Play, on the all-new Himalaya podcast app. Wherever you find podcasts, you will find Locked On Packers, the number one Packers podcast in the state of Wisconsin, and the show for fans who know what happened. They want to know why and how. We are going to do our rookie orientation with Jace Sternberger today. I don't want you to feel like we have given some very important Packers news the short shrift on this. I want to be able to give it time to breathe. I want to be able to speak to it in a more full manner. And that news, of course, is the passing of Packers legend Bart Starr. We are going to discuss this, and it is something that I think deserves the full reverence of, if not a full podcast, at least a lengthy conversation about what he was to this organization, what he meant to this team, what he meant to an era of football, and what he meant to the game, what he meant as an ambassador. Not just for the Packers, but for the NFL and the contributions that he made after the league as a philanthropist and a mentor and all of the things that he did off the field as well. They are just as worthy as what he did on the field of praise. And so we are going to spend time doing that. I appreciate everyone sticking with me on this modified schedule this week with Memorial Day on Monday. I didn't want to give you homework. I didn't want you to feel like you had to stay caught up with the holiday. This is a great long weekend. It's also a good time to remember. And I think, unfortunately, you know, we have a lot to remember right now in the case of Bart Starr and his unfortunate passing. And it is unfortunate that a lot of soldiers that we remember as part of Memorial Day have passed. And that is what we remember. And that remembrance part of it is really important. So I hope everyone had a restful and enjoyable weekend. Long weekend, and that you spent at least a little bit of time with reckoning with why we have the holiday. I think it's important. And so I hope everyone got a chance to do that. We're going to get, so Billy Lucci, who runs TexAgs.com, one of the best college sites you're going to find out there, and one of the most knowledgeable guys that you're going to find talking about college football. We actually had a conversation about both Jace Sternberger and Kingsley Keke, the Packers doubled down on Texas A&M football players in this latest draft. And so we're going to split those conversations up as part of our rookie orientation series. He and I had a lengthy conversation that his dog wanted to be a part of, so if you hear some barking, that's why. But the conversation is incredibly informative, in my opinion. It was something that I think you'll find interesting, that you will find useful as we think about these players and the way that they can impact this team. In the case of Jace Sternberger, I want to talk, before we get to Billy and that conversation that we had, I think it's important to have some sort of idea of how we think this is going to go as a rookie and what his role could be. So number one, you know, the Packers have starting tight ends. So Jimmy Graham and Mercedes Lewis,
I don't think there's any real reason to think that he's going to play significant snaps over those two guys. Remember, Mike McCarthy is no longer in charge of this team. The Packers front office thought enough of Mercedes Lewis to bring him back. This Matt LaFleur offense is predicated on a variety in terms of personnel groupings, but also on playing big and being able to play big and being able to run the ball or throw it out of big personnel. Well, you need to play two tight ends, and Green Bay cannot play Jimmy Graham and Jay Sternberger at once right away, at the very least, and expect to be maximizing their personnel from a run-pass standpoint. Sternberger just isn't a good enough blocker at this point in his career, though I think it's something he can improve on. That's something we're certainly going to talk to Billy about. And we know the flaws and the shortcomings that Jimmy Graham has as a blocker, no matter what Brian Gutekunst tells you, no matter what he says about, oh, well, you know, I thought he did. Well, I thought, no. Well, no. Okay, we saw the games, Brian. I hate to break it to you. And I just... It is also the case that Jay Sternberger probably is going to have some packages for him. And he's going to be able to play some on the field with Jimmy Graham. I think you're going to see some interesting two receiver, two tight end sets where both guys are split out wide and both guys are in the slot. Or you put one out wide and you put one in the slot on the same side of the field. Or you put one out wide on the left side, put one on the slot on the right side. And there's just so many ways you can deploy two guys who can move the way that they can. And you're mitigating their issues as blockers. There is going to be opportunities early for him to play. This is, without question, a draft pick on the eye for 2020. And I'm not forgetting Big Bob Tonyan. Trust me, I would never do that. You know me better than that. I would never, ever forget Big Bob Tonyan. He's gonna compete for time here as well. Matt LaFleur plays two tight ends regularly. At least we think he's going to. And they open, like I said, they open training camp, two receivers, halfback, fullback. They're gonna play with big personnel a lot. And Jace is going to get an opportunity to play. He's going to get an opportunity to play a fair amount. And even if he's not the starter, there's going to be three tight end sets where he can get on the field. There's going to be packages, route concepts that they like him in, and combination routes that they like him running, and leak out blocking. I mean, this is the tailor-made. If you're a rookie and you're a tight end and you can't do a lot, but you can run, this is the offense you want to be in because they create opportunities. So you put him out there and yeah, you're going to have to run some when he's out there, but you run some of those leak plays where you go play action and you get the whole defense going one way and you leak him out the backside. He can turn 5 into 25, 35, 45 in a hurry because he's got speed. He's got after the catch ability with being physical as a runner. We're going to talk about a lot of those traits. This is not, I don't think anyone should expect him to come in and be rookie of the year. Tight ends struggle as rookies, just basically universally. And so I want everyone to have clear expectations going into this, what he's going to be for this offense. This is not a 2019 play. He can be a factor. He can be tight end one by 2020 and beyond. He's going to have to get a little bit better as a blocker. He's going to have to develop some chemistry with Aaron Rodgers. And if he can prove to be a reliable target, he's going to get the ball. So there's that part of it. And then if he proves to be a reliable blocker, then he can develop into that true tight end one in this Matt LaFleur offense. And in football parlance, I think we can say pretty clearly that that would be sexy. Jay Sternberger in this offense would be sexy. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about sex. Remember the days when you were always ready to go? Maybe those days are now. Even if they are, you can always get that little boost, an increase in your performance, at BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. And remember, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for anyone who wants that little extra function in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. Right now, we have a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free with our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON. Today's show is also brought to you by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friends' trips. Book your own at Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com, be there, do that, get rewarded. All right, let's get to our conversation with Billy Lucci. He is the executive editor and co-owner of TexAgs. That's TexAgs.com. Billy Lucci on Twitter. The I is silent, so it's BillyLi. UCCI. Billy, thanks for joining Locked On Packers.
No, no problem. Anytime.
So the Packers doubled up with Texas A&M prospects in the 2019 NFL draft. And I want to start with Jay Sternberger, whose name I had been mispronouncing this entire pre-draft process. And so I apologize to Jace for that. But he is one of the more interesting prospects in this draft because his path is so unique. I can't imagine that when he got to campus after basically an unsuccessful stint at Kansas and as a JUCO college transfer, that you had the expectation that he was going to come in and light up the SEC the way that he did.
No, I don't think. I'm not sure anybody outside of Jace did. I know when he was actually Jimbo Fisher's first commitment at Texas A&M. Under Kevin Sumlin, the Aggies essentially didn't. They tried to recruit guys to play tight end, but they really didn't use a tight end in their offense. So, upon arriving, Jimbo Fisher got here and realized for a guy that had a couple of years earlier produced a Mackey Award winner in Nick O'Leary, there wasn't a tight end on campus. So when they go out and sign Jace Sternberger, Jace wasn't just a junior college tight end that had transferred from Kansas. He was a pretty lightly recruited junior college tight end. Now, they were eyeing him at Florida State right about the time they were leaving to A&M. But most Aggie fans, and even to some degree myself, who covers this stuff every day, most people felt like, okay, you got to get a tight end. So you'll start with this guy. It was almost like he was just going to be a body.
Right.
You have to start with him because you're going to have to sign at least two and probably three. And A&M did go out and sign a high school one that year as well. They brought in a grad transfer senior from Arizona and tried to sign another one. In fact, even tried to sign the number one JUCO tight end in the country who ended up at Tennessee. So once they signed him, though, and you started watching that junior college tape, the very first name I thought of was Jeremy Shockey.
Wow.
When I watched him in the passing game, when I watched the way he attacked the ball, when I watched how difficult he was to tackle. And then you had to wonder, though, how big was he really? Did it really translate to the SEC level? Because, you know, it's one thing to see somebody doing it at Northeast Oklahoma Junior College. And then, but I'll tell you, when I was sold on him was after he signed, hearing the A&M coaches talk about him, hearing Jimbo Fisher, hearing his position coach, Tim Brewster. And I went out, he was a midterm enrollee. And before they started spring ball, I went and watched Johnny Manziel throw with some of the A&M receivers. It was just kind of a voluntary off-season thing. Johnny was there, kind of reached out to some of the guys and said, do y'all want to go throw? And A&M's got some really talented young receivers. And I went there to watch them, and I couldn't stop watching Jace Sternberger.
Wow.
everything he did with his route running, his hands, how big he was. He was every bit of, about right around 6'4", and at that time probably 240. Now he's up over 250. I just, the routes and the hands and the attention to detail I saw, and I ended up leaving there with Johnny, and he told me, he said, man, that tight end's going to be really good. And so we both kind of saw the same thing that day. And a couple weeks later, he's a spring game MVP, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because the first game, you know, obviously Northwestern State, not the toughest opponent, but he goes out 5 for 56 and 2 touchdowns. And you have to be like, whoa, like this guy really is. He's legit.
Yeah, and it wasn't the, you know, the 5 for 56 was one thing, but it was the, you saw it in fall camp, you saw it in spring ball, and then you saw it in a game. And one of those 2 touchdowns was just a spectacular back of the end zone catch that 245, 250 pounders don't make typically. And then against Clemson, a week later, he makes a couple plays early in that game, and you go, okay, so now he's doing it against Clemson. Now he's doing it against one of the couple best defenses in college football, mm-hmm. and he's still in only his second game. And he just kind of went from there. He really never slowed down. He and I have talked about it. I thought maybe he had one off game all season, to be honest with you. I mean, there were some where the catch numbers were higher than others, but just one game where he kind of battled the football, and I think the physicality kind of got to all the A&M guys that week. It was just kind of an off week for them at Mississippi State with those three first-rounders on the defense. I think State's one of those teams that if you don't have it buttoned down when you go in there and are really on your game, they're going to expose you in their house. They do that to SEC teams all the time. And I think with A&M, they were young at quarterback, young at receiver, young at tight end, and that one kind of got away from them in a hurry, and Jace was one of them. But that was the only bad game I saw him play all season.
Well, and it is interesting because that came right after the South Carolina game, which is about as good as a college tight end can play. I mean, he punked those dudes.
Yeah, I've seen some pretty good tight end play at A&M. Martellus Bennett kind of stands out there. But Jace, and I talked to a couple NFL coaches about him. That game, and not just that game, but others, you know, you watch him against Kentucky, you watch him against LSU, and he is extremely difficult to tackle. At South Carolina, that was, like you said, that's the most kind of jaw-dropping example of it. But he is extremely difficult to tackle, whether it's in the open field or whether it's just right after the catch, kind of able to pull away from that guy that's draped on him, covering him, more so than any tight end in the country this year. I'm telling you right now, I watch and study this stuff, and after the catch, as far as ball skills and after the catch, I don't believe there was a better one in college football this season. And you saw him do it against a Kentucky team that finished ranked in the top 12 and probably had a top 15 defense. You saw him make a couple plays, including score a touchdown against Bama. You saw him, you mentioned South Carolina, LSU. He put a terrific move on Grant Delpit, got away from him for a short touchdown, and then
and he might be a top 10 pick next year.
Yeah, Grant's going to be a top 10 pick. And I mean, there are several other games where he did that as well. I think Ole Miss, he had a big game. So, again, he's doing this against Auburn. He had like a 40-yard catch on a throwback. He's doing this against better competition than most of these guys were playing against. We talked about Clemson. So, yeah. And on top of that, his highlights, catching the football, and we talked about in the passing game, I think are better than any tight end in the draft this season.
And by the way, the stats bear that out. He was better after the catch than T.J. Hockenson, than Irv Smith Jr., than Noah Fant. I mean, then some of these guys who were first-round picks. No, T.J. Hockenson was a top 10 pick and Sternberger was better after the catch, at least statistically. But I think that the eye test is there with him too. I love the Jeremy Shockey comparison. I just think that is so bang on. But let's turn this a little bit, because if there is one question about him, it is, can he play in line for Matt LaFleur? Can he be the blocker that the Packers need him to be? I think the questions about his blocking are a little overrated. I think, you know, he's a kid who is big, he's strong. He just needs a little bit of work there. I mean, tell me what you see with him as a blocker.
And I've talked to a lot of guys. You know, my business partner that we own TexAgs together played about 10 years in the NFL as a blocking tight end. My college roommate was Dan Campbell, who, you know, Packers fans would know. He interviewed for the Packers head job this year, and he was a longtime blocking tight end in the NFL with the Giants and Cowboys mainly. Jace is a, and I've talked to them extensively about Jace. You know, Jace is a willing blocker. He's not a guy that's not going to be able to be taught. You got to think about where he came from, you know, Kansas and spreading it out in the Big 12, and then the junior college ranks where he was basically a glorified, he was a big receiver. And then he comes to A&M where they require those guys to block. And if you watch him from beginning of the year till end, he was always a willing blocker. The technique wasn't there. And he's not the biggest guy, but he's not small where he's just going to get slung around down there. But it was the technique and really kind of having a clue what he was expected to do in there. And it got better as the season went on. And I interviewed him right after he announced he was turning pro. He came in studio with me and he said, yeah, you know, I learned more. They had a change at the tight end coaching position, and they brought in a guy that had played for a while at OU in the NFL. And he said to us on air, I learned more about blocking in bowl practices than I had all season. Wow. He said, I really thought I came on. And I think part of that was he really clicked with the new coach. And then I also think, I think technique-wise he got better. I also think it was, look, it's his 13th game now. It wasn't – and you had 3 weeks to prepare for a game as opposed to one, so he could really drill in and hone in on what he wanted to do. And sure enough, he came out and did a nice job of blocking in that bowl game against NC State. So the potential there, do I ever think he's going to be a dominant inline blocker? No. But I think he's going to be he like you said, he's strong. He's not a small tight end. He's not a big tight end. And he's willing to do it, and he's got the feet to do it, and he's got the athleticism. So I think he's going to end up being a fine blocker but an exceptional playmaker in the passing game.
Yeah, I mean, two things on that, right? If you can catch the ball and you can create down the field, I almost don't care. but then he has the attitude for it. Blocking is about attitude, and you watch him run with the ball after the catch and see guys try and tackle him. He's got the attitude to do it.
Go watch if you get time, or anybody listening. There was a play against. Gosh, I've got to think of the opponent, but he got hit coming across the middle. A ball was, I think it was Kentucky. It was Kentucky. A ball was tipped, and he got hit just absolutely laid out coming from, the middle of the field, running towards the sideline, looking back at the football, and it was tipped. And the guy really cleaned him up to the point where you didn't know if he was going to return to the game. And he came back in a few plays later, made a play, went crazy, and then later in that game scored what ended up being the game-winning touchdown off another tip ball. So, Jace does not – there ain't anything about him that's not tough. I'll tell you that right now. And I think, look, what Green Bay got is a guy that if he'd have come back for his senior year, he's probably a first-round pick, and they got him in the third round. If he'd come back for his senior season, had one more offseason in the weight room, because he came in at, what, 252, 253 at his pro day, I think. He didn't play at that. He played, I bet you, 10 pounds lighter. if he'd have had one off season in the weight room or more, and another off season under Joe John Finley and Jimbo Fisher's offense to learn how to block, he had a returning starter at quarterback. I think there's no question in my mind that Jace would have been a late first round pick or early second, and Green Bay got him in the third. So I think they got a steal.
All right, I want to thank Billy for joining the show once again. Remember, we are going to be back with another Billy Lucci special on this, talking Kingsley Keke. And he was gracious enough to give me a little extra time, and we were able to break down both players. So we're going to get to that next week. Today's show is also brought to you by Untuckit.com. Untuckit is the solution that fits just right. Their shirts are designed specifically to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to Untuckit.com with the promo code NBA to get 20% off. And today's show is also brought to you by Grip 6, where their goal is to literally make the best belt that's ever been made. Ultra lightweight with no holes, no flap, and it carries a low profile with the buckle laying flat across the waist, making the belt comfortable. Grip 6 is the only belt with no holes, no flap, and no bulk. Their special promo code right now, grip6.com/lock, L-O-C-K-E. We're going to be back tomorrow, and that is going to be our Bart Starr Remembrance Show. Getting into his history, his impact, and everything that he's done for the Packers organization. I think it's important that we pay homage to him and honor his memory, his legacy. It is really unmatched, and I think it is not hyperbole for those who call him the greatest Packer ever for taking into consideration everything that the word great means. So that'll be tomorrow, and then we will finish out the week. Four shows this week, and then back on a normal schedule next week. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Packers. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Spotify, on Google Play, on the all-new Himalaya podcast app. Anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find Locked On Packers, the number one Packers podcast in the state of Wisconsin. And you know it, the show for fans who know what happened, they want to know why and how. And anytime you want to hit us up on the Locked On Packers fan hotline, you can do that, 920-341-3775, to always stay Locked On Packers.